for being with us on Sports 180 on this Thursday afternoon. We are halfway home. Sports Talk will take over 90 minutes from right now. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward. Hope you're having a great day so far. Remember, you can always find us on the WNML app. Listen back in the podcast section of the app for any interview, any show, right here on the station. And coming up on Sports Talk this afternoon, you'll hear John Wilkerson, who will join us for the next half hour right here on Sports 180. John, good afternoon. How are you?
Doing well. Hope you guys are.
Yeah, doing really well. And conversation we've had today, it's Jeremy Pruitt's birthday, so we've talked about some of the success he's had as Tennessee's coach to this point. Is there a game that would stand out as the most important win for Jeremy as Tennessee's head coach? And you can look at that however you would want to, but if you look at the 2018 and 19 seasons, which game would you choose as maybe the most important win for him as Tennessee's coach?
Well, I've been thinking about this since I heard you guys start the conversation, and I think you could come up with really three distinct answers. I'm going to go with this past season's Kentucky game. If you don't win that game, then I think that there perhaps is a setback. I think they still make the a bowl game, because I think they would win at Missouri and they would beat Vanderbilt, but I just think to keep things going in the right direction, to get that win on the road, I thought that was really big. It gave them a chance to go ahead, keep the streak alive as they finished with 6 straight wins to close the season, including the bowl game. But I would put that Kentucky game there. But I think you could also make an argument for his win, the win that he has against his highest-rated team, which is the victory over Kentucky last season, or I should say in 2018, when they were number 11 and they came down here and Tennessee just took control of the game. And then the other game that I would put on my Jeremy Pruitt Heisman ballot would be the win at Auburn, simply for the fact that it changed the conversation for Tennessee. When you consider that they had not won against the Western Division, any Western Division opponent in forever, I just thought that was huge. And it came at a good time, because I think it was, even though he himself admits that the buy-in wasn't as good as it should have been, because he didn't do everything he could have to convince those that he inherited, hey, follow me and good things will happen, which I think he did such a good job of improving for last season in 2019. But that win at Auburn, I just think it came at a good time. You had lost back-to-back games to Georgia and Florida. Things weren't looking good, and I thought that was the first step in the right direction. It ruined Auburn's season, but but I would have those three. This past season's win at Kentucky, the season before win at home over the Wildcats for their highest win, or their win over their highest ranked opponent thus far, and then the win at Auburn, which was a victory for the Vols, long awaited against a Western Division foe.
See, I think there's a perception problem, John, with what Kentucky actually is now and the elevated level that Mark Stoops has that program, to where I think people still think of them as the Kentucky is old and maybe don't give as much respect to Jeremy Pruitt for those two wins as what you just did and your reasoning for it. But I honestly, I think you're pretty spot on.
Well, I do think that Kentucky has proven itself to be a better and much more solid program than it has been. Obviously, with some trolling that goes back and forth between some Kentucky sports radio show hosts and Vol Twitter, I think the emotions are almost always raw. I mean, you even had Dan Issel, a Kentucky basketball legend, that chimed in on Tennessee kind of sniping the bowl games away, the bowl game spot away from Kentucky last year, with Tennessee getting the trip to Jacksonville. So I just think that it's it really is something to see, the back and forth. But I think that it is, I think, one, Mark Stoops is very deserving for what he has created in Lexington, and at the same time, Tennessee fans get to enjoy the fact that there is sheer dominance for the orange and white over the big blue.
Yeah, and that's interesting, John. You know, there's the whole the most important game is the next one you play, which is definitely correct. It's also kind of a lame thing to try to pitch for sports talk radio. It actually applies this past season, though, doesn't it? Because, you know, if they don't win the Mississippi State game, what happens next? That's a question. But if they don't beat South Carolina, if they don't beat Kentucky, if they don't beat Missouri, the season still ends up obviously not being what it was, but there could be the the domino effect one way or the other on how it would have played, how things would have played out. So Tennessee being able to regroup and just go win this game, go win the next game, I do think there was some kind of cumulative effect, and Kentucky had had several, beating Kentucky, I mean, that game had an impact in several ways by the end of the season as well, including the bowl game that you're bringing up.
Well, and also I just thought the way the game played out, I mean, Tennessee gutted that one out. It looked like the Wildcats were simply just going to put them away. 13 points, I guess, was it in the first quarter, and then not another point. And then Tennessee had the great goal line stand at the end. I just thought it was a game that had a chance to get out of hand, and probably if it had been played in 2018, it would have. Especially when you look at the timing of the in the place of the season, because Tennessee, of course, fell flat when it had a chance the year before at 5-5 to get to a bowl game and didn't. As a it was pretty much embarrassed by both Missouri and Vanderbilt. So I just thought that the way they gutted out that win was something. And you're right to bring up the Mississippi State game. That was key as well. If the Vols don't win that game, then I do think that you don't see the finish that you saw. And even more so, goodness gracious, we would have had to deal with a member of the morning show being on top of a dealership forever. Woof.
I actually wouldn't have minded that part. Just kidding. Let me ask you this, John, because we're talking about, you know, positive progression moving forward, and this is coming on the heels of Tom Fornelli's comments earlier this week about, you know, saying Alabama's susceptible to being beat by Tennessee this year. When you're looking at a possible, or maybe the strongest possibility of a marquee win this season for Jeremy Pruitt, what game would you circle?
Boy, that's a really good question. I would think if the schedule remained the same in terms of the outlay, which is changing a little bit for 2020, I would have circled Georgia, because normally it's in the first month of the season, the Bulldogs would be going through the transition that they are, and that is they return one starting offensive lineman. They've got a new quarterback, even though it looks to be a veteran quarterback. And normally you'd be playing them, I guess, right around that first week of October, which would be game number 5. And so I would have thought that that would be the best opportunity for Tennessee, even though the game would be in Athens. I just think that might have been. But as it stands right now, gosh, I want to say Florida because it's here. But then I also give Tennessee the opportunity to go to Oklahoma, because once again, the Sooners are going through another change at quarterback. I don't know that they've had anybody that transfers in for the one season, you know, pro starter kit tutelage under Lincoln Riley. So I just think that I think Tennessee has a shot in Norman, and I would probably put Oklahoma number one and at Oklahoma number one and Florida number two, just for where they happen on the schedule.
John, do you think we should reevaluate the home and away conversation with the, at least right now, lack of knowledge of what fan capacity will be? That, you know, going to Norman's not going to be the typical road environment right now, but coming to Neyland Stadium is not going to be expected to be the same kind of environment in terms of fan allowance. Maybe that changes, but right now, if you're talking about, I don't know, 25% to 50% capacity at most, is going to Norman easier than normal? But is coming to Neyland Stadium easier than normal? Does that affect things at all for this fall?
Well, I think any effort to checkerboard will really come up short.
It'll look like patchwork.
oh man, wearing the wrong shirt. I guess I'll have to sit 6 feet over here. Anyhow, I think it's a very valid point, simply for the fact we just don't know. I mean, yeah. You know, Iowa State's doing what it's doing and selling 30,000 season tickets, and you have to have a season ticket to be able to get into the stadium. I think that's a raw deal for students, but I also fully understand that you can't assume exactly what the layout will be and what guidelines will be in practice when we get to the month of September, or even late August for that matter. So I do think that it's a very fair question. And I would expect at this point in time that road games may not be as difficult as they normally are, as well as home games might not provide the same advantage you're used to, because you just don't know how many folks will be on hand. And so, yeah, I think there is the chance for you to be able to go somewhere and perform better than you normally might. I also think that Tennessee would be in better position to go on the road if indeed we weren't dealing with anything outside of the ordinary because I just think Tennessee's a more veteran ball club. You have greater depth, you have better talent, and I think you have more experience, especially when you look at what could be on hand if the waiver comes through for Cade Mays,
yep.
just starting up front with your front five. I mean, when you look at 4 5-star athletes and performing across the line and a 6-year senior, you know, anchoring the line at center, I just think that gives an offense a chance to be really, really sound. And no doubt about it, it still remains true for Tennessee. Their success or lack thereof is probably going to be predicated by what they get out of either Jarrett Garantano or whoever winds up at quarterback leading the way on offense. You have to have good quarterback play, especially if you want to win on the road. But I think a veteran offensive line, a talented offensive line, as much as Tennessee's had up front in a while, is also something that would be a huge chip in Tennessee's favor.
I don't want to take away from any of that analysis that you just laid out, because I think you are spot on with your quarterback conversation and how this offensive line could dramatically change the conversation. But when you talked about the checkerboard, something popped into my mind. If fans are allowed in Neyland Stadium this year, does the mask have to match the shirt? Or can you go orange with a smoky gray mask? I mean, there's a lot of fashion questions that I'm going to need to get caught up on if fans are allowed to tailgate and participate in game atmosphere.
I think it comes down to personal choice. I think we all know that there are accent colors. Black has been one that has been utilized by so many Tennessee teams throughout the years. Whether we're talking track, baseball, you can just go across the board and know that times it's been much more heavily used by some outfits rather than others. Smoky gray would also be a good way to bring out the orange or the white, whichever you're wearing that day, above the belt. And then there are some that just prefer to go color rush, all orange, all white, something along those lines. I am one that is, I don't like the color rush where it's just the same monochromes top to bottom. I prefer to mix it up. I like to go orange and white or whatever. I like to go based on home or away. If you think the team is wearing orange that day, you wear orange. If they're wearing white, you wear white, and so on. That's my own personal preference, but hey, that's just me.
Yeah, like with the NFL, John, my biggest issue with the color rush in the NFL is that it looks bad.
Not just bad, so bad. And it's not as though it's the regular team colors. I mean, whatever this – I hope Jacksonville, the Jags, got a great deal from Gould's Mustard, because they've been wearing their color for quite some time, and it is putrid. And it's like, did that actually come off of a color wheel or out of a baby's diaper?
Oh, yowza.
Yeah, that's a rhetorical question, I think, as well. John Wilkerson's with us. We'll come back. Major League Baseball, will they ever play again? We'll discuss coming up here. We have another segment with John. He'll be on Sports Talk this afternoon as well. Of course, with Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ward on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Where what Willis was talking about. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
This is Sports 180. Thank you for being with us online, 99.1thesportsanimal.com. With Heather Harrington, I'm Josh Ford, Sam Foreman producing, and we have another segment with John Wilkerson before he heads off to get ready for Sports Talk at 3. And John, we continue to wait to see what will happen with Major League Baseball. I remain optimistic that they'll play, because surely they're going to play, but reports came out last night that the players are essentially planning to ignore the proposal that came earlier this week from the owners and provide their own with more games to be played. What do you think about what you've read, what you've heard, and where things stand as we're here just a few days to go in the month of May with no agreement in Major League Baseball?
Boy, Major League Baseball, with the conversation that's ongoing, has given the NFL something to point to and say, man, they just can't get along, can they? Can't get out of their own way. It really is ridiculous that at a point in time like we're experiencing right here, right now, they can't get past the we need to work together as opposed to let's do this, which benefits our side of the fence as much as possible. I just think they need to recognize all that is going on, what it would mean if they could find an agreement for this calendar year only. That's all they have to do, is reach an agreement for this calendar year only, and they can do so with the notion that the players don't have to give up the less than equitable split in revenue that they would be agreeing to, a prorated salary. Owners need to do what they can to make sure that the guys who wear their uniform are taken care of to the best degree possible, simply for the fact that whether it be those that are on their major league roster right now or those that could be with the 40-man roster and their minor league organization, I just think that both sides are being incredibly short-sighted, as well as tone-deaf to, again, what all is still going on and has yet to be decided and or determined. I just think that you look at what the NBA, the NHL, the NFL are all doing and trying to get back or keep things on schedule to start their season like football. Baseball has just decided to muck it all up. And I really think that they are missing out on an opportunity. I think NASCAR, on the other hand, is trying to make the absolute most of this opportunity that they've been really the most organized, return, full force, biggest spotlight to this point, and they're trying to make the most of it to perhaps re-energize a fan base and following because of what they're hoping to get done. Baseball's just missing the boat, and for them to be so short-sighted, it's really ridiculous, and again, it shows that they don't have any concern out of their own tight circles for all that others might be experiencing, and certainly could use the release and relief of being able to watch something like as great a game as baseball is.
And I get it from the player's perspective. Like, they don't want to be taken advantage of. They don't want this to set a tone whenever another collective bargaining agreement comes up. But I get what you're saying, too. Like, can we all just figure it out for right now and table any long-term conversations? I just wonder, is there any repairing this divide between the players and the owners in Major League Baseball?
Boy, I sure hope so. You would hope that somebody on each side, at least, or perhaps even a handful, would be able to step forward and say, come on, you got to understand, let's build this bridge for this year, and then do so collectively with exactly what you're talking about. It doesn't have to say anything that happens this year is written in stone. If they expand the playoffs, if they go with the universal DH, all of that can be for just 2020 and 2020 alone. Everything else will go back into the conversation, back onto the table, and you could also say right now that all we're doing is patchworking this year together, and then we will go back to the parameters of the last agreement that we had with the CBA, and then know that there are going to be both sides wanting to plead their case for significant changes and or advantages for their respective side in the future. There's nothing wrong with that, but they are missing the boat, and they're really looking poor when it comes to it's such a bad look with what they're doing and just kind of scrapping and clawing at one another when you have the chance to just say, let's do what it takes to get back on the field and we'll worry about the big picture things for 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, you're right, because in a lot of ways, John, I can side with the players and what their opinions are, but they come across, at least a few have, representing a lot of the players as big jerks. And fans, at some point, they're not going to care what their opinions are. They're going to care the way the message is being delivered. Like Blake Snell, I thought he had some fair points. His delivery was very poor, I thought, and that's going to make the most impact in the end.
Yeah, it really will. And I don't fault anyone for having concerns because, again, we still have many more questions than there are answers. Doesn't mean that things can't move forward. Doesn't mean that things are going to, in the end, be for the most part all right for the vast majority of people. But still, I mean, if you've experienced it, if you have concerns, if there are reasons, perhaps it's people who live with you in your household or people you interact with on a regular basis that you don't have any notion that you would like to do anything that would put them in any kind of danger. That's all fair, because there are those that have this at the forefront of their concerns, and there are those that have pushed it to the back burner. I don't know that either one has to be 100% the case, but I just think that baseball right now is looking the least organized and least cooperative when it comes to trying to make something happen to just add to the picture of things that can change the conversation in terms of just giving folks a chance to catch their breath and perhaps worry, just get a break from any worries they have, whether it's those that are impacted specifically with either losing a business, their job, so many different things that that have become just such serious issues for those to deal with. I mean, anything that gives you a small break from that kind of real world and immediate impact concern, I think is paramount, and baseball is just missing the boat entirely thus far.
Do you think the early July timeline of returning to action is still a legitimate one with how this process has played out?
I'm going to hold out optimism that it is. I think that as divided as they appear, it would seem that it would be perhaps a pipe dream. But you are talking about maybe they were talking about June 10th. That was kind of the target for when they are able to get back on the diamond, go through spring training part two, and build up for a start 1st of July or 4th of July, kind of resuming or even starting, for their case, the season. I think that's all within reach, but still, it doesn't look like they're anywhere close to being able to come to that peaceful, easy feeling that has everybody working lockstep to get back, to get the game back on the field.
Hey, John, more important subject before you go. It's National Hamburger Day. What would you put on the ideal burger? What's your burger setup?
I'll say this. For me, I can be just like it's a – my favorite kind of pizza is just cheese. My burger almost the same way. For instance, when I enjoy Litton's, I usually have just the bun, burger, cheese, and a white onion. And not a full white onion, just pieces of white onion. That to me is glorious. But if it's if I have my pick, it probably is just cheese. I'm very simple, very easy to please.
Yeah, do you more often go fries or onion rings with the burger?
Ooh, at Litton's, it's hard to pass up those onion rings.
Boy, you're not kidding. And of course, outside of Knoxville, my favorite place to get a burger, because you have the choice between beef and bison, is Ted's Montana Grill. And I always make the most of the SEC locales that are fortunate to have one. And I ask aloud to the universe, why doesn't Knoxville deserve one? I know a couple of places that would spots that would be perfect for it. But anyhow, I usually go with the 50-50. They give you that option. So you get the burger, you get half fries, half onion rings, and goodness gracious, just like Ralphie, all is right in the world when that happens.
I mean, that sounds like that old cliche, having your cake and eating it too. You get fries and onion rings. I love that. But I am a little disappointed to hear you touting another restaurant that needs to come to Knoxville besides Whataburger. I'm very disappointed.
Well, and Whataburger, I love the fact that there are SEC locales for them. I mean, Texas A&M, obviously, but in between trips to Fayetteville, they had added a Whataburger that was within walking distance of our hotel. Whataburger is unbelievable. So, yes, if it would, the easiest one to drop in would be Whataburger. And the fact that you can go to Hoover, Alabama, boom, there's one. Boy, it just makes that stretch of 59 so much more worthwhile when you know what's waiting potentially at the end.
Yeah, you can also, by the way, you can break rules sometimes. So if you find some burgers like at Stock and Barrel, they have some burgers that offer some crispy onions on the burger, then you get the French fries. So you're kind of cheating.
Very true.
Yeah, getting both the – it's a different onion ring, of course, but the onion and the fries both together, combo.
Well, and also I have to give a shout-out. Knoxville owned and such a great operation, Muya on Kingston Pike. That has become – that when Tennessee baseball sweeps a series, Penny and I, we go to Muya to celebrate a sweep, sweeps only. But that's what's – and, of course, they have the – like you can see others that do it. They have the lettuce-wrap burger if you want to go without the bun. And Penny loves the onion straws that they'll put on a burger, which, again, talks – and I think that right now we're very close. In fact, you can pencil it in. We think that Muya might have the best fries in Knoxville because they are just glorious. But anyhow, you have so many wonderful options. But you're right. When you have the fried onions, that does kind of give you an end around as to, I think I'll have that and then enjoy my fries just as much.
Why have we done this to ourselves? I'm so hungry now. We will move forward. John, a fun conversation. We appreciate the time. We'll check in with you again before Sports Talk at 3 o'clock.